én kofferidem és ne zsáj. Lepáté samostám, mi van tiszte dolgok, vechodníke, ne. Tom, dolgok, szavrát, a patrőr, ne. Én ezt perintem, tam, frem, a patrőr, ne. Patrőr, dolgok, zagléram, madonna, én osvam.
Rysz.
Én bíj, palné, mlát, mlát, én tot is szív. Сил не та немски обчајни, черни батони. Прво тиста права волк. Красен.
Радиска згодба о людих ти устварјају дух часа на радију студент.
Laži in resnica o Bahrajnu.
Well, again, I mean, the identification didn't happen on a Tunisia basis. The identification was of anyone who took part in the protest. They would have red circles put on their faces, and regardless of if they're Sunni or Shia, they were pointed out and then arrested. And so were the Armeni Sunnis who were arrested and put in prison. Some of them are still in prison. There are Sunnis who were tortured. Like I said, it's not about Sunnis and Shias. There are Shias who are in very comfortable positions defending the government today. And there are Sunnis who are in prison and tortured because they criticize the government. So although the government tries to make it a Sunni-Shia issue, it's not really.
Naslednje pol ure v duhu časa posvečamo vsem aktivistkam in aktivistom, branilkam človekovih pravic, vsem državljanskim novinarjem, vsem svobodomiselnim državljanom Bahrajna in vsem tistim, ki so zaradi tega že izgubili življenje. Kot veste, se na arhipelagu 33 otokov, predvsem pa na največjem in najbolj obljudenem izmed njih, otoku Bahrajnu, vse od lanskega 14. februarja piše nova zgodovina v borbi za demokratizacijo družbe in prelom z avtoritarno preteklostjo, ki je na Bahrajnu nekako zakoreninjena vse od leta 1783. Letnica predstavlja prihod in začetek več kot 200 let trajajoče vladavine sunitske kraljeve družine Al-Kalifa iz Saudske Arabije. Kljub temu, da se kraljeva družina in vsi sorodniki ali avtoritarna bahrajnska vlada na vso moč trudijo ljudsko vstajo prikazati le kot sunitsko-šiitski konflikt, za katerim stoji bodisi Iran s svojimi vohuni, ali pa uporabijo vedno priročno ter ob vseh priložnostih zavajujoče pojasnilo, da za vsem stojijo teroristi, je resnica veliko bolj kompleksna in enostavna obenem. Za začetek naj vam predstavimo nocojšnja sogovornika in gosta oddaje. Govorili smo z Marjam Al-Hawadža, hčerko Abduladija Al-Hawadže, osebe, ki jo večina ljudi opisuje s skoraj povsem identičnimi besedami in sicer ga razumejo kot botra na področju boja za človekove pravice. Na tem mestu mu posvetimo in namenimo par besed. Gre za najbolj znanega aktivista in zaščitnika človekovih pravic v širši regiji Perzijskega zaliva. Abduladi Al-Hawadža je spiritualni in idejni oče ter eden od ustanoviteljev Bahrajnskega centra za človekove pravice. Centra, ki vse od ustanovitve leta 2002 aktivno bdi nad krhkimi normami zagotavljanja in varovanja človekovih pravic na Bahrajnu. Zaradi Abduladijevega kritičnega glasu in številnih pozivov po odpravi diskriminacije verskih manjšin ter izpustitvi številnih političnih zapornikov je bil nemalokrat tarča grožen smrtjo in vladnega nadlegovanja, vključno s pretepanjem in mučenjem, tradicionalno povzročenim strani posebnih represivnih enot na Bahrajnu. Pred enim letom pa je bil zaradi svojega dela obsojen na doživljenjski zapor, ker naj bi domnevno koval načrte, kako iz 200-letnega prestola strmoglaviti bahrajnsko kraljevo dinastijo Al-Kalifa. Prizadevanje in domet njegovega delovanja na področju človekovih pravic pa še zdaleč nista bila nikoli omejena zgolj na Bahrajn, ampak bi lahko dejali, da je le to prej veljalo za celotno regijo Perzijskega zaliva in širše. Začetkom prestajanja doživljenjske zaporne kazni Abduladija je večino dotedanjega očetovega dela nasledila in prevzela naša sogovornica in njegova hčer Marjam, ki trenutno opravlja funkcijo direktorice Bahrajnskega centra za človekove pravice. Sledi zanimiv pogovor z mlado aktivistko Marjam, v katerem je poudarila, da revolucionarno gibanje nikoli ni bilo osnovano na razlikah med šiitsko večino in sunitsko manjšino. V njem namreč sodelujejo vsi, ki si želijo svobode, dostojanstva in človeka vrednega življenja. Žrtve nasilja in represije pa so pravzaprav vsi, ki si drznejo na glas kritizirati in opozarjati, ne glede, kateri islamski ločini pripadajo. Med drugim je izpostavila tudi vodilno vlogo Bahrajnske mladine in izredno premeteno organizacijsko mrežo, ki so jo vzpostavili in zaradi katere bahrajnske avtoritarne oblasti še do danes niso uspele izvedeti, kdo pravzaprav so člani koalicije Mladina 14. februarja.
I've spoken with many activists from Bahrain, for example, with Ala Shiab, with Mr. Nabil Rajab, and they've all described your father with almost exact words, that he is a spiritual leader and founder or father of Bahrainian Center for Human Rights. So can you tell me in short the story of your father and his role in Bahraini revolution?
Started at a very young age when he was a teenager and he had to leave the country and he was in exile until 2001. He basically set up the entire human rights culture and system within Bahrain. He's known as the human rights godfather. Many of the people in Bahrain, if not all of them, have either worked with him or they have been trained by him, the people who are human rights defenders today, I mean. But also not only on the level of Bahrain, also, if you look at the Middle East and North Africa region, where my father was with frontline defenders, he actually worked with and trained many, if not most, of the human rights defenders in the Middle East and North Africa region. So his name is not only known within the human rights field when it comes to Bahrain, but rather the entire region.
Have you spoken with your father recently, or do you have any information? How is your father?
Yes, I spoke to him, I think it was last week. And he told me that he was gaining weight, that he was doing it a little better. But we're still waiting to see if there's any permanent damage. But hopefully, it looks like so far it's going well.
Marjam, you as a young person, how do you see the activism of the youth, of the Bahrainian youth? Are they cooperating in so-called revolution?
Yeah, I mean, they're leading it. They're not only cooperating. And we've seen this not only in Bahrain, but in most of the countries that witness revolutions and uprisings. Is that the youth become a leading role in trying to bring about change and trying to promote human rights. And I think that's very true if you look at Bahrain today, the amount of people working to promote human rights or to document violations has really increased rapidly since the beginning of the protest movement.
You've mentioned that they have a leading role in a revolution, but that they're also very well organized. What can you tell us about the organization of the youth?
The youth in Bahrain were very smart because they knew that if they ever come out and people know who they are, that they would get arrested. And, you know, for them, it wasn't about being in the spotlight. And so they stayed undercover throughout the period where a lot of people expected them to come out and take credit for what they were doing. But they were smarter than that. And so until today, people don't know who the youth of February 14th, the February 14th coalition are. And that's the reason why they've been able to survive. That's the reason why the government hasn't been able to put an end to it.
What about the youth in the other countries, in the neighboring countries? Are they cooperating with each other or there is a lack of communication among them?
Well, I think in general, you'll see that the majority of protesters, you know, stand in solidarity with each other. You'll find a lot more of a closer solidarity group within the human rights activist, spectrum. Rather than the ordinary, everyday youth.
Look, as I'm monitoring this uprising in the Arab world, in the Maghreb and in the Middle East, it seems, or actually it is, the protesters in Bahrain are, as I believe, the most peaceful, despite the excessive use of brutal force against them. And as it seems, the government continues to escalate the use of force.
Well, I mean, you know, the Bahraini protesters have, for the most part, stayed peaceful. There have been a few incidents where people have decided to defend themselves or to, you know, fight back using things like stones and Molotov cocktails. But, of course, you can't equate that with the state-run systematic violence that is escalating. On the other hand, you know, the majority of protesters until today remain peaceful. they've decided that that's the way that they want to go. And you have to also remember, in Bahrain, people don't have access to arms or guns either, so it's not like it's actually a choice. But they've understood that this is their way to go if they actually want to bring about change, that using peaceful methods is the best option for their situation in Bahrain.
Yeah, before you mentioned United Nations, and I wanted to know, what is your opinion, or actually your comment on all these international organizations, and especially the Western countries? For example, their hypocrisy, how do they treat the Syria and the Bahrain on the other hand?
Well, we've seen a lot of double standards when it comes to dealing with the different countries in the Arab Spring, especially in regards to the United Nations and other places. It's getting better now. I mean, you know, so you also have to compare it from where we started. So when we started, you could never even imagine the Gulf being brought up in regards to human rights violations at the UN Human Rights Council. The fact that yesterday they actually put out a joint statement about Bahrain under Item 4 and the Human Rights Council really says about how much, you know, we've progressed since a year ago, that the Human Rights Council is actually willing to pinpoint one of the Gulf countries as committing grave human rights violations. And I think this is a huge step. Ideally, of course, we should have already had a special session on Bahrain. Ideally, we should have been at a point right now where there's a resolution, where there's a talk about economic sanctions. But we don't live in an ideal world. And given the situation we have today, we're using what we have to try and make a difference to people in Bahrain.
Yeah, but what can you say about the time in which they respond, these international organizations? Because as it seems, they are always behind the time.
Yeah, I mean, they've been behind the time with a lot of things. I mean, you know, you're talking about being behind the time in Egypt, for example. They waited for such a long time before they gave up on Mubarak and decided to say that we're not going to support him anymore. They also, you know, when we're talking about Syria, you're talking about massacres that are happening on the ground. And the international community is condemning and talking about it and putting out statements. But they haven't actually taken an active role in stopping the massacres from happening. So you were looking at the situation where the response to different violations has been very slow. Yes, there has been a particular case from Bahrain, because it's not only been slower, it's been weaker when it comes to Bahrain. So those countries are usually not even willing to do anything on Bahrain because they don't want to, because of geopolitical interests. So that's why it takes a lot longer, and it takes a lot more convincing and lobbying than it would in with any other country.
For example, this kind of revolution is not the first time some kind of revolution during the 50s in the last century. Just then the repressive regime were British, and now yeah. Is the royal family. And as it seems, actually the Western countries do not want to change the balance of the power. Once I've called the Bahrain the hostage of the geostrategy. Would you agree with that statement?
Well, I think to a certain extent, yes. They don't want to change their friends in the Middle East. They've already lost several friends through these revolutions that they didn't think that they would lose. So for them, losing Bahrain is another problem. But also you have to remember that Bahrain is the neighbor of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is 50 times more important to Bahrain, if not more. I mean, more important to the West than Bahrain. And so I think their inactivity, their refusal to do anything on Bahrain, at points has a lot more to do with their relationship with Saudi Arabia than it does with Bahrain.
One maybe proof of the friendship between the Sunni royal family Al Khalifa and maybe especially British and American government is that on this year's one anniversary of the revolution, which began last year, they've hired the former chief of Miami and Philadelphia police, John Timoney, and the chief yes. of Special Unit of London Police, John Yates. And when I've spoken yes. with Mr. Nabil Rajab, he said to me that since these two guys came to Bahrain, more and more people are getting killed on a daily basis.
Yeah, they definitely have been. Bahrain has a history in using people, especially from the UK, to come and quote-unquote advise the government or quote-unquote reform different parts of the government. And they don't usually turn out very well. Usually the situation will get even worse after they arrive, which has been the case with John Yates and John Simony, unfortunately. But I think, you know, like I said, it has nothing, of course, you mentioned that it's the Sunni royal family in Bahrain. I wanted to mention that it has nothing to do with the royal family being Sunni. It's about people demanding freedom and dignity and human rights from an oppressive government. You know, the religious aspect of the entire situation has nothing to do with the situation on the ground.
Can you tell me your experience with your own words, what was going on last year in Salmania Hospital? Because the Sunni royal family, Al Khalifa, they're trying to blame as that the Shia community overtook the hospital and took the doctors and the nurses for hostages. Of course, this was not the truth.
Like I said, it has nothing to do with the government, the royal family being Sunni or the people being Shia. Yes, the crackdown to a certain extent or to a large extent was sectarian, but the movement itself was not. And I was in Salmania Hospital last year and I saw the situation. You know, people were being brought in. A lot of them looked like they were dying. They were shot. There were so many injured. And people were just being frantic. You know, it was chaotic. And I didn't see the doctors refuse to treat anyone. The doctors, on the other hand, they were, you know, emotionally shattered from what they saw. And I think that's what really affected them during that situation. But the government itself, you know, after all of the defamation campaign, after arresting and torturing these doctors, they dropped the charges of possession of arms and as well as occupying the main hospital.
One of the things which bothered me when I watched the documentary about Bahrain was that the most of the repressive forces which were injured, the members of repressive forces which were injured and arrived to the Salmania Hospital were actually foreigners. And that there is quite a significant ongoing of naturalization of foreigners, especially to fill the particular types of repressive forces.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that the majority of people taken to Salmania Hospital were not Bahraini. I think, on the contrary, the number of Bahrainis who got injured were, you know, much, much larger than any other group. But I do agree with you that there is a systematic policy of political naturalization, and the majority of security forces in Bahrain, whether you're talking about the riot police or the army, are non-Bahraini. They're politically naturalized from Yemen, Jordan, Syria, and mostly Pakistan.
Okay, Mariam, maybe just the last question. How would you describe the social and economic situation in Bahrain?
Well, I think, you know, the situation is getting worse and worse, both socially and economically. People are getting very frustrated. They feel like change is not coming fast enough. They're living under repression almost on a daily basis. And this really makes it difficult for people, you know, to keep going and keep calm. And so we're hoping that we're going to be able to stop the human rights violations before the situation gets worse and out of hand.
Okay, maybe just for the end, do you have any message for our listeners?
Well, I mean, I think that for the Bahraini people right now, they're not really depending on governments abroad to really do something about the situation. They've lost hope in that. So they're really depending on people like you and me, you know, regular people who listen to the radio or watch TV, who find out about what's going on in Bahrain to actually lend a hand of support or stand in solidarity or try and make a difference for the Bahraini people.
Ponovno pa smo uspeli spregovoriti z direktorjem Zalivskega in bivšim predsednikom Bahrajnskega centra za človekove pravice Nabilom Ražapom. S človekom, ki naj bi poleg Abduladija vodil, kot se radi izrazijo Bahrajnčani, Bahrajnsko revolucijo. Na telefon nam ga je uspelo priklicati na izjemno redek dan, ko Nabil zaporno celico za kratek čas zamenja za nič bolj prijazne Bahrajnske ulice. Pogovor z Nabilom pričenjamo z vprašanjem, koliko postopkov teče proti njemu zaradi aktivizma in svobodnega izražanja.
Well, I have 5 cases against me in court now, and all of them to do of my Twitter account and my statement I made in Twitter account, criticizing some people, criticizing the government, criticizing the prime minister, calling for a peaceful protest, calling for gathering. It is all about things to do with my freedom of expression, all to do with my practicing my right of freedom of gathering, at all the, because I am being activist, because I'm a human rights defender, because I believe in empowering people here and fighting for their rights, and empowering people, educating people in human rights. Now I am in jail, and I've been spending time almost 2 months there. In the past 2 months, I spent on jail as a punishment for being outspoken, criticizing the prime minister, criticizing the king, the member of ruling family, which is a taboo in this part of the world. But I've been breaking those taboos, and I'm being punished now.
You were one of 750 political prisoners which are still in Bahraini jail. How are they doing? How is with them?
Well, first of all, I was kept in alone, and I was not kept with anybody. So I spent my most 2 months alone in the jail, and they wouldn't allow me to mix with other local people, political prisoners, and they don't want me to influence them. That's why they kept me alone. Well, most of the almost all the political prisoners, they were systematically tortured and ill-treated. At least 5 people were tortured to death. 750 is a lot for a country with only 600,000 population. It's the highest maybe percentage for a political prisoner that you will ever have in any other countries that witness similar situation. But we still, people are being detained, still people are being arrested. As I am talking to you, people are being arrested in different villages, in different cities. Bahrain government tried to silence the protests and tried to link them with terrorism and terrorists so they can attract the international community on their side. They try to mislead the international community by presenting us as bad people, as terrorists, because we're fighting for freedom, we're fighting for human rights, and we're fighting for democracy. Most of those people in jail, tortured and being accused and charged with things to do with gathering, with things to do with freedom of expression, and they are punished today because of their peaceful fight for democracy and human rights.
I've already spoken with Mrs. Mariam Al-Khawaja, and she told me the Bahraini government and the royal family is all the time using that behind these protests or revolution, that there is Iran behind it, or Iranian spies, or simply just terrorists. But this is not the truth, because even this is not based on the sectarian relationship between the Sunnis and the Shia, but as I understand, this is all Bahraini people which want to have a better life tomorrow. Like you've said before, you wanted to have a better life for your children. All the people are actually fighting for the same thing, for democratization of Bahraini society, freedom and human dignity.
Yeah, I mean, internationally, Bahrain government and the Gulf countries are aware of the sensitivity of the problem, of the relation between Iran from one side and the Western government. Bahraini government always try to link us, as we the freedom fighter, we those people fighting for democracy. They try to link us with Iran, which is not the case, which is not the truth. We want a government that is similar to the one that you have in Europe, that an institution, a government that respects human rights, equality, justice, fair distribution of wealth, government, elected parliament that has power. So Bahrain government always try to run away from the actual demand of the people and talk all the time about Iran and about us and Iran. So what they want to mislead the public opinion, they want to mislead the international community opinion, they want to mislead the Western government by presenting the democratic movement here as an Iranian tool in here. This is one thing. The second thing, they try to mislead the people in the region here by saying that we are a Shia movement, so that they can, because Shia are a minority in the Arab region, they are a minority in the whole Islamic world, and they try always to frighten the Sunni community that people in Bahrain, they're Shias and they want to help Iran and all that. So they try to play with this religious differences between Shias and Sunni. They try to divide people as they believe conquer and divide. But although the movement in Bahrain were headed by Shias and Sunnis, Yes, we didn't have much Sunni in the prison, but we have people fighting for dignity and freedom and justice from both sides, Shias and Sunni. Yes, it's normal that we see more Shias because Shias are more marginalized than the others. So you see them ahead of the revolution. But the people, the demand, the people fight, they fight for democracy and justice and human rights for both sets, for Shias and Sunni. But Bahrain government, as I tell you, locally, regionally, they play in the divide Shias and Sunni. Internationally, they play with Iran, American, and they try to use, link what is going on with the demand of people for democracy with Iran to just mislead the public opinion, the international community, and to fight those fighting for democracy with Western help.
How big would you say is an obstacle or a barrier is presenting Saudi Arabia in achieving your set goals in struggle for democratization of Bahraini society?
Well, we have a lot of obstacles that does not happen with other revolutions, like in example Tunisia or Egypt. We are in a region ruled by families. We are in a region, although we are the only country in the Gulf that's ruled by a family which came from outside 200 years ago. But they came to a country, they came to a civilized country, educated people when they came. We existed, we have civilization thousands of years when the Gulf country did not exist. We have civilization, educated society. We have neighboring country that's ruled by the family, mainly Saudi Arabia, who don't want to see democracy. For them, democracy is a threat. For them, justice is a threat because they rule with absolute power, family, brothers and cousins and all that. Now we call for justice and democracy. They see that as a threat. For them, Iraq is becoming a democratic state is a threat. For them, Egypt becoming democratic state is a threat. Now, when you call Bahrain to become a democracy, that would be the closest threat to their border. So they are fighting that with all their strength, power, and money. And now you have another obstacle that we are from a region considered to be a rich region. Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Gulf countries, this ruled by family. It's a rich region with oil. It's a big market for arms sale. So that made European countries reluctant, made European countries silent, or if there will be a criticism, it's going to be very soft and shy criticism. And we paid high price for that. That's been seen by those dictators as a green signal, as go-ahead signal. That's why our rulers are continuing in human rights violation and crime committed against people. And from the other side, we see no talk from the international community. We see silence from United States government, which is the biggest and influential country in Bahrain. We see similar silence from UK government and other European countries. Always we see European country headed by UK and headed by United States could play a better role to strengthen to people here and to support the struggle of people for democracy and human rights. But unfortunately, no positive role being played so far.
I understand that the Western governments, especially, as you've mentioned, the United Kingdom and the United States, they're quite aware that if they lose, for example, Bahrain as their partner or as their ally, in quotes, of course, I believe that they think that they will lose that impact in the region.
Democracy, it will come sooner or later. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know how much more price we're going to pay to achieve democracy, but I'm optimistic that we're going to have it. Now the region could change at any time. Its movement, Arab Spring, started. It's going to take some time, but the whole region is changing because dictators will not live forever. Things are changing rapidly in this part of the world, and I don't think it's smart of UK and United States to continue supporting dictators in this part of the world, whether it's Bahrain, whether it's Saudi Arabia, whether it's Oman, or United Arab Emirates. I think those countries should be pressured. Demand of the people, legitimate demand of people, should be respected. In this world today, you cannot rule those countries like your own company, like it is going on in Bahrain and other Gulf countries. One family, whole cabinet made of one family, whole ranking jobs of the government made up of one family. That does not work anymore. People are educated. People are aware today of their rights. Not anymore like 150 years ago or 40 years ago or even 20 years ago. Today, people are aware. They've seen, witnessed democracy around the world and the struggle of this nation in this part of the world has started. A smart government, those who will start reforming themselves, listening to the demand of the people, and those crazy, stupid government who will ignore the legitimate demand of the people. If they don't reform themselves, time will come to wipe them off the history and off the map. And this is what we say all the time. Either reform yourself, either change yourself, or you will be changed by your own people.
Mariam, before in our conversation, told me that the people of Bahrain are actually, they end up hoping for foreign government's help and that they are quite disappointed over the international human rights organizations and that they have to depend on themselves. And she even quoted me one of your statements.
Go ahead.
Okay. You once said that the biggest or fatal mistake of Bahrainian authoritarian government is that they, through the repression, created happy population of human rights activists, and the other half is citizen journalists. She actually quoted me that you
yes.
have said this once, and that since this protest movement has begun, actually these people who are quite active is enormous and is increasing from day to day.
It's the stupidity of the Bahrain government when they stopped journalists in getting into the country. They stopped human rights and media into getting into the country. They tried to disconnect us from the outside world, from the international community. And we have learned in the past year and a half a lot. Now each and every citizen of us become journalists, become human rights defender, become activists, become photographer to let the outside world know what's happening. So I don't see what is going on always as a negative thing. I always look at it from the positive side. We have learned a lot. Our nation have learned a lot. We are very much educated, much more than a year ago or a year and a half ago. So each and every kid you see in the street, you can speak to, you will be amazed that the level of education they have. And this is the good thing. Always we had a good thing. Everybody start reporting, everybody start writing, everybody start speaking. I am speaking to you with you are from an outside radio station. 2 years ago, I wouldn't speak to you. And I wouldn't have this logic when I speak to you. But I learned. I learned from what I see in the street. I learned from the repression, from the dictatorship. We always learned from that and changed things negative to positive. And thanks God, that's a positive thing that we have witnessed among our nation.
Zeitgeist po labirintu laži, kaj se dejansko dogaja v Bahrajnu, je pripravil Luka Počivalšek. Brala sem Pija, tehniciral je Rok.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, je pa te samo ostane, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa tre vrata, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa prema vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna eno šo.
Res.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in to je siv, siv, ne ta nemški občalnik, črn pa to ne, prav tista prava volk, ne, krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa na Radiu Študent.